on. Okay. So let's start. We studied over the past few sessions, I can't say few weeks because we broke a lot, we studied the various places in the Talmud where it invoked the concept of Eis Lasos. We saw different ways that the concept was utilized, and we now we're going to embark on something different. We're going to see if this concept has any practical application in Jewish law. So what we're going to do tonight is discuss a tshuva, a responsa. That means that's a piece. There's different ways you have Jewish law. You have the Talmud, and then law is often codified out of the Talmud. There's debates, there's arguments, or there isn't. And then codifiers go through it and write law. And then there's responsa. Responsa are when a questioner asks a rabbi about a specific question, and it may be a specific case or context. And that piece of information I'm giving you is going to be very relevant for tonight. And we're going to be looking more at responsa tonight, although we're going to be doing it all outside. So we're going to be looking at discussing the responsa of Henkin, which discusses this question of women studying Talmud, and he uses Eis Lasos. But to make the class more interesting, because it is a broad topic, I want to discuss also Rav Moshe Feinstein's position, and I want to discuss Rav Zalman Sirotkin's position, and maybe briefly touch upon Rav Soloveitchik's position, because what I think we'll gain is we'll see why the other rabbis, why they were reticent to use the concept of Eis Lasos. And why did Rav Henkin need to use it? So we'll really get a fuller understanding of that. Okay, so let me first give you a little background about Rav Henkin, because again, all these responsa literatures, you have to know who the person writing it is and who's he writing it to. So Rav Yehuda Herzl Henkin is a major posek in Israel. He's a modern Orthodox posek, generally on the more liberal spectrum. And he studied with his grandfather, who was a very great rabbi, Rev Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, who was probably the greatest posek in America, till Rabbi Feinstein became ascendant, and Rev Yosef Eliyahu Henkin died in 1973. Okay, so that's who he. That's the background. So his community. Are you here for the class? Yes. Yeah. Sure. So, right, Yehuda Herzl Henkin, his community is liberal, modern, Orthodox people in Israel. His education, which is very unusual for a posek, I think he has something in common with you. He studied in Columbia University, and he studied with his grandfather. Okay, most of the rabbis writing these books, that's not their education. They didn't go to Columbia University. So again, he's going to have a very different perspective in how he looks at things. So now that's the background. So he discusses that there is this book, and it's unusual to find Tshuvot written in English. I have his Hebrew books, and I have his English books. So this is an English version of his Tshuva, and it really is pretty much the same as the Hebrew. Like, I even compared it, and it's very rare that you find that. So basically, what he goes through initially are some of the reasons why women cannot study Talmud, which I think we should study because we'll understand the context of the problem. And then we're going to see how he comes to a different conclusion than what's the standard practice, and he uses Eis Lasos. The main problem, really it's one problem, there's a Gemara in Sota that says anyone who teaches their daughter a Torah is considered tiflis. Now tiflis means something like they're going to make mockery of it, it's frivolous, women won't take it seriously. You can either understand this, there's really two ways to understand this prohibition, or maybe three ways. One way to say, I guess the most fundamentalist way is, hey, women are just different, they're not like men, they don't relate, Torah study is more an abstract endeavor, it's not for women, they don't do it. Another way to look at it is, hey, that was all societal. Women in those times were literate. Women in those times weren't educated. They were baking kugel and they were mommies. It's not for them, but that leaves open the door that if times change, it can change. A middle way, which I think most of the people looked at it, was generally women aren't capable of this. Either it's their nature or it's the sociology. But there always were exceptions. And the truth is, in mainstream normative halakha, you always find examples where there was an odd woman here, an odd woman there, who knew the Talmud or studied Torah. From the period of the Talmud all the way through, you know, till the modern era. There always were exceptions. So I think the middle way I presented is how most of the poskim looked at it. The Rambam codifies this. I mentioned that such you have a statement in the Talmud. There is actually an argument. There is another opinion that doesn't think that, but this is the accepted opinion. The Rambam codifies it. It means he quotes it. That's the law. The Shulchan Aruch quotes it. Just to give you some context, Rav Moshe Feinstein, who, you know, was the greatest posek in America, who many times could be quite open-minded on this issue, really isn't. But again, we'll also have to look at the context of his question. This is what he says. And I think it's just good to give you the idea of what Rav Henkin's dealing with. You know, this is the, what Rav Moshe is saying is the standard halakha. Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked a question by the Rosh Yeshiva, the Philadelphia Yeshiva. So that already gives you a little context because they're very yeshivish. Should the Beis Yaakov, meaning the girls, separate sex girls school in his city, they want to teach Mishnayos to girls. Is that acceptable? So Rav Moshe, very clear cut, says, quotes the Rambam, quotes the Gemara that I quoted, that no, we can't. They can't learn this because this is not what they're supposed to do. They can learn Musar, meaning like ethical teachings, because that will help inspire them to be better people, but there's really no reason for them to do this. Now, interestingly enough, I would argue Rav Moshe, one, you have to look at the context. There wasn't like a clamor of yeshivish girls looking to study Mishnah. So Rav Moshe really will respect the status quo unless the status quo changed or there was a need to change it. In other words, if the questioner was from the modern Orthodox schools, let me rephrase the question. Rabbi, it has been established for the last 75 years or 60 years that girls in our school study Mishnah and Gemara. I don't know if this is halakhically permissible. Should we allow this? Should we permit this or try to change it? The answer may be very different because that's established already. Here, nobody in this context was studying it. So why make a change? Because Rav Moshe is very into what's called melamed zchus, which means he looks to find merit on the practices of the Jewish people. So even if they deviate from the standard halakhic practice and there's a need for that deviation, he'll look to justify it. In this case, there was no need to justify it. So that's why he takes just, he quotes he doesn't quote the Shulchan Aruch, interestingly, but he quotes the Rambam. So this is what Rav Henkin's dealing with. This is a major normative posek. The Shulchan Aruch says it, and that's that. So how does Rav Henkin deal with this, and how does Ace Lassos come into play? What he says is something I alluded to, that throughout time, this prohibition, whenever there's a prohibition, you have to ask yourself, is it an objective prohibition or a subjective prohibition? If it's objective, if we never found the case of a woman studying Talmud or Mishnah or anything, it would seem to be objective, and then we'd probably have very little room to maneuver, be much harder to maneuver. If we could find examples throughout Jewish history or Achronim, you know, other codifiers and great scholars that contextualize this prohibition, then it's already a subjective prohibition. So that's what he does. The first thing is, many of the Achronim point out, there's a prohibition to teach your daughter. There's no prohibition for the woman on her own to go learn. In other words, don't teach your daughter. But if the woman on her own volition, probably because she has the intellectual capacity and is sophisticated, wants to learn, peace be to her. Let her go learn. And there's many examples of this. And he mentions, what about the great women in time in over Jewish history who did learn? So that was one argument he makes. Again, now the context of his argument, he needs the widest opening of these other opinions that we'll see that permit it. He's going to argue for equalizing everything. Men and women could study the same thing. There'll be no difference. Okay? So he needs a much broader... He can't just take those sources and say, that's fine. Again, even Rav Moshe, I should point out, the context is, should they in Beis Yaakov teach Mishnah? It's not the same question if a really brilliant woman who's Haredi and is getting a PhD feels the need to learn Gemara, his answer would be different because he's also aware of those sources. Okay? But Rav Henkin wants to go further. So basically, what he does is he makes a very creative argument. He says the real issue with Tiflis is people don't take it seriously. And that's why women could study the written Torah, because that's the women take seriously. But what's Torah Sheval Par, the oral law, they won't take it seriously, so why should you teach them that? So his one argument is, today, since Torah Sheval Par is written down, it's a written book, and he's sort of right in a way, if we think about it, we take it very seriously. We don't look at the Talmud as inferior to the Chumash. They're both written books. Okay, one's from God, one's from the rabbis, but the rabbis were basing it on their understanding of what God wanted. So he says today that's equalized. Then what he wants to say, working off of the earlier argument, is that women, there always were these exceptional women. So he wants to argue that today our women are those exceptional women. Our women today are independent. You know, he's living in this community where the girls are independent. They're earning their own living. They're going to university. They have freedom. One of the arguments against teaching women Talmud was that they would use it to subvert Jewish law. He's like, look, today we're in an open society. Any woman who wants to not be observant, they could check out. Nobody's stopping them. We're in an open and free society. So that argument doesn't really make sense. And his argument is, look, we have a generation of women that are very educated on a secular level. And if their Judaic knowledge is shallow or limited, it's not going to appeal to them. They're going to be very, you know, they'll get a PhD, but the most they've learned is a fourth grade or fifth grade level. It's going to be, either they'll be religious and not sophisticated in their observance, or they'll leave it, or they just won't. It just won't be good. So he says we have to change. And this is where Ace comes in. He says Ace Lassos sort of is like that imperative to make the change. In other words, Rav Henkin marshaled some sources, right, in favor. In other words, the status quo is women shouldn't learn Talmud. That's the normative sources. He gave you a few arguments. Our women aren't the historical norm. Today, Tar Shabbat is like Tar Shabbat Sav, and there's a great need. Ace Lassos, when you're confronted with the status quo, even where you have a few sources, okay, allows the change. That's what he's doing. And again, this goes back to, I mentioned, the only way you can use Ace Lassos is where there are sources to permit change. Nobody's going to come out. We studied a Gemara about writing down the Torah Sheval Par. So that, there were no sources for. That was a Rabbis had their backs against the wall. That we'll never see again. You'll never see in response to literature somebody coming out where there's no sources to permit something. We need to do this Ace Lassos. Won't happen. That's a legal procedure. Won't happen. Here, he has some sources. He has some logic to work with. And the question is, what validates making a major change? And again, the major change, as we'll see when we look at the next two opinions, isn't so much that women could study some Mishnah and Talmud, because even Rav Zalman Sarutskin and Rav Soloveitchik permit that. His change is they could study anything. It's not a limited permission. Oh, they could study what's practical, as we're going to see. There are some rabbis who say, look, women need to know halacha. So look, the truth is, if you really want to understand halacha, you need to study the Talmud. So maybe we'll say they could study the halacha through the Talmud. Okay. His argument is women are fundamentally the same today, and their needs are to study this. They could study anything, even the abstract parts of the Talmud that aren't practical halacha. Bava Kama, you know, cows, goring cows, torts and stuff. This isn't practical. No woman needs to study this. Tuman Tahara, the laws of ritual impurity, okay? temple's not built. It's not really practical. He's saying they could study it. So he goes the furthest. He equalizes it. And again, he can only do this with aslossos. There are other ways, as we'll see, to permit women to study Talmud on a limited basis. Okay, and that's why I want to give you this context so you really get the extent of what he's doing. If I don't discuss those tshuvas with you, you wouldn't see that. But he's going the furthest. Again, he's definitely the most liberal of the poskim, and he's in the most liberal of the communities that we're discussing. So again, each posek looks at that. So that's Rav Henkin. Go ahead.
So to clarify, in principle, because this in Sota, whatever page, is that women would not be allowed to study.
Yes.
But because there are some antecedents, is that women...
The prohibition isn't clearly objective, because even though the Talmud says that, and the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch quote it, there are examples of women who study, and there are achronim who limit them, because the language, we didn't look at the language, is you don't teach your daughter, meaning the woman can learn on her own. There are openings in it. There are exceptional women. There are women who are very intelligent throughout time. They could go and study.
But what has to do that with Eidla Sot?
Because how could you change? So everyone would agree that there are exceptions. The other poskim we're going to discuss, and even Rav Moshe would probably agree there are exceptions. Okay? But to make a major shift where you're saying that men and women are equal in the realm of the study of Talmud Torah, you need something more than some sources. You need Eis Lassos. You need something that is saying there's an imperative to switch. If we don't switch, we're going to lose these women to observance. There's a need, like writing down the Torah Shabbat Path, like, what was the other example? The Kohen Gadol going out and greeting Alexander the Great. There's an imperative here. That's his argument. Okay? Now, I'm going to drive to the other side. I actually think this is very creative. The next rabbi I want to discuss is Rav Zalman Sirotzkin. Rav Zalman Sirotzkin was from Eastern Europe. He learned in the great yeshiva of Telz, which, interestingly enough, today is considered like the most right-wing yeshiva in America, one of them. In Eastern Europe, it was actually one of the most open-minded yeshivas. They opened up schools with secular studies through the high school level before the war. They had teacher seminaries. It's a whole discussion in itself what happened to Telz. But pre-World War II, they were one of the most open, and the way they studied Talmud was one of the most open-minded. It was in the yeshiva world, but certainly one of the most open-minded places. So Zalman Sirotzkin came from Telz, and basically he went to Israel right before the Holocaust, which was probably a very good move. And he became the head of Chinuch Atzmai, which is the yeshivish system in Israel, their system of education. In Israel, you have secular public schools, you have religious public schools, and then there's a stream of Chinuch Atzmai, which are religious schools that aren't public schools. They're more Haredi with some secular studies. And this is his school. He was the head of the school system. That's why this question is relevant to him. So he was asked about women studying Talmud and Mishnah. Again, it's much more limited. Can they study some Mishnah and some Shulchan Aruch? Things like that. Much more limited. And again, in the context of where he's coming from, it's still a radical change to permit it. Now, you also have to understand, I probably should have mentioned this before, a lot of this also comes out of a great rabbi named the Chafetz Chaim. You all heard of the Chafetz Chaim? Okay, the Chafetz Chaim lived for 100 years. He lived from 1833 to 1933. He was a great rabbi in Poland. He wrote a great halachic work called the Mishnah Berurah. He was also involved in the Yeshiva Rod. And I know people that studied with him. I mean, nobody's alive today who studied with him. And basically, in Poland, and this historical backdrop is important to keep in mind, there were no Jewish girls' schools in all of Eastern Europe into the 1910s. It sounds crazy, right? Because of this prohibition to teach girls Torah. Okay? So what happened? Pre-modern times, they learned from mommy. The problem is when the world started changing, they wanted to go to school. So they started going to secular schools. And what was happening is you had this big gap. The men Some of them would be very religious, very yeshiva educated. And the women they married were much more comfortable with secular things. And there was this huge gap. So either they didn't stay religious, they resentfully married these very religious guys but had nothing in common, and the women do set the tone for the home, as we'll see in a minute. And these kids, you know, how religious would they be if the mom, dad could be out there learning, but if mom's not giving them that spirit in the home. So the Chafetz Chaim created a system of girls' schools with the head of Beis Yaakov, but he was the one that got behind it and endorsed it, which was, again, to us it sounds crazy, but it was a radical change. So a lot of the context of this, the two people we're going to discuss now, Rav Zalman Sarutsky and Rav Soloveitchik, come out of this. The question is, can you extend the Chafetz Chaim? The Chafetz Chaim only permitted them to study Chumash, Torah Shebiksav. He didn't permit any Mishnah, any Halacha, and no Gemara. So Rav Zalman Sarutsky is saying, listen, maybe we're going to go and extend the Chafetz Chaim a bit more 40 years later and allow some Mishnah and some Shulchan Aruch. So what he does is very interesting. Unlike Rav Henkin, he doesn't argue women are the same as men. What he says is women are different. So how does he get to that women are different than men, yet they have a right to learn Talmud and Mishnah? Brilliant what he does. Okay? And it's brilliant because, again, think of his context. He's a Haredi rabbi looking to make a moderate change. He needs to do it with the cloak of tradition without being too radical. Okay? So what he argues is women, which I do agree at this point, women transmit religion. And in the old days, that transmission came mother to daughter. That system broke down, like the Chafetz Chaim's context. They need schooling. Now, for them to really transmit Judaism, maybe the Chumash isn't enough. They need to know some halacha. They need to know some Mishnah. And they're not going to really gather that spirit of how to transmit religion without that. So he bases it on two historical sources, which is fascinating. One, it says in the time of King Chizkiyahu, which is in Gemara Sanhedrin 94b, that King Chizkiyahu led a religious revival. His father was Ahav, who was a really bad king who destroyed Judaism, made people worship idols, there was very little Torah knowledge. And King Chizkiyahu had this revival, and it says, in the time of King Chizkiyahu, there was no boy or girl who didn't know all the laws of Tumah Tahara, which is a very abstract area of Jewish law. There's no boy or girl who didn't know the rules of ritual impurity. So the commentaries point out that's a very abstract area of learning. If the boys and girls know that, they know everything, right? I don't know that stuff. You know, I know this stuff. I don't know that. Nobody in the shul knows Tumah and Tahara. The most learned people don't know it. So how could it be? So what Rav Sarutsky asks is, wait a second. If there's a prohibition to teach girls to learn Torah, how could King Chizkiyahu have it that every boy and girl knows this stuff? So this is his answer. This is brilliant. He says it was a crisis. His father destroyed Judaism. You have to rebuild it. How are you going to rebuild it? Women are part of that process. So you need to educate the women so that they can transmit that to the children. So in the context where the religion is destroyed or weakened, it's built in. We see a source that women should learn more than basics, because that's how they transmit it. He gives another example, Sarah. It says that Sarah's tent was established before Avram's tent. Again, on the surface, if they're learning Torah, what would take priority, logically? Avraham. Men have an obligation to study Torah. If we had a question, he writes this in his tshuva, of what to establish, a boy's yeshiva or a girl's yeshiva, there's a limited pool of funds, you would think logically the boys' yeshiva. He goes, no. Because he believes that women are fundamentally different and the religion is transmitted to them through them, in a breakdown of traditional society, again, Avram and Sarah's time, nobody was really religious or Jewish. You're starting from ground zero. Sarah's tent takes priority. I mean, I don't know if you guys appreciate the brilliance of what this man's doing. He's very traditional. He's showing he's not challenging the notion that women are different. yet he's using these traditional sources to allow them to study some Torah Shebal Peh. Of all these tshuvas, I got to be honest, I'm most impressed with his. It's utterly brilliant. So that's Rav Zalman Sirotzkin's tshuva. Okay, so again, compare and contrast Rav Henkin. Rav Henkin wants to permit much more. Rav Henkin basically wants to equalize men and women learning. So he needs to use much broader arguments, and he needs to be more audacious and use Eis Lassos. Rav Sirotzkin wouldn't hear of using Eis Lassos. They would run him out of his job if he did it. So he does it in a very different way, arguing men and women are the same, but there is precedence. Because women are different, I said men and women are the same. Men and women are different, but because they're different, religion's transmitted through them. And there are times we have precedents where religion has been weakened, that there are sources that their learning even may take priority or certainly equal. Okay? Brilliant. Okay? Now, we're going to do Rav Soloveitchik. We're in a young Israel. I don't totally want to do it because there is no... Again, a lot of Rav Soloveitchik, great man, he wasn't a posek, there is no tshuva. There's a book by Seth Farber that talks about him establishing the Maimonides School in Boston. And in that book, there's a few pages about his position on women learning Talmud. Now, interestingly, a lot of Rav Soloveitchik, there's a lot of debates today, who was Rav Soloveitchik? Some say he was basically a moderately Haredi rabbi who made concessions to modernity because he felt it was needed to in the time. Others feel he was very much a much more modern rabbi who would fit in the more modern liberal circles of modern Orthodoxy. And on this issue, there's going to be the same debate. Okay? Everything with him is like that. Co-ed education, did he really like it? Did he want a radical change that there should be co-ed schools? He felt it was better because it equalizes things. Some say yes. Some say no. He established Maimonides because that was the only way to establish a school, a quality school in that time in Boston, was to make it co-ed. But he really would have preferred a separate sex school. So the same thing with women studying Talmud. Is he basically like Rav Zalman Sirotzkin? Or is he like Rav Henkin? And that's basically a debate. So, there are no sources to study. It's only anecdotal. He didn't write any of this down. And it could also be because he had different types of students and different types of people, and maybe he himself may have went back and forth on it. It was better for his sake to be ambiguous. Okay, so his grandson, Rav Tversky, argues that he's more like Rav Zalman Sirotzkin. His grandson's a Rebbe in YU. He says that it's called a Torah intuition. It's like the Chafetz Chaim, that there's a breakdown in society. Women, we need to let women study. So again, Rav Soloveitchik's just going a step further than the Chafetz Chaim. It's not, the Chafetz Chaim permitted Chumash and Musar because he felt that's what women needed to have this, to be knowledgeable in Judaism and to transmit it. Rav Soloveitchik's saying, hey, I like that argument. We got to go one step further. They need to study practical halachic gemaras because they need that also. That's also part of that education. They're not arguing in principle. They're arguing in application. The proof to that argument, if you look at Maimonides, the day school, his school, it's elementary and high school, they only studied, although it was co-ed and although women studied equal to men, they only studied practical gemaras there. They studied Pesachim, the laws of Passover. They studied Shabbos. They studied Chulin, which is laws of Shchit, like kosherous principles. So that would be an argument in favor that he really was like Rav Zalman Sirotzkin, right? Now, the more Walter Wurzberger said no. He really wanted to equalize men and women's learning, sort of like Rav Henkin. And that's really what he wanted. Now, Rav Lichtenstein, interestingly enough, who's his son-in-law and probably has the greatest insight into him, said this. He said that he taught his daughters everything, like in terms of Talmud. He didn't limit, say, oh, you can only learn this or learn that. And that's what he felt's right. But I don't know that that's a proof, because his daughters may have been that exception that we spoke about. And Rav Lichtenstein may just be saying in today's times it's different. The needs are different. So those basically are all the positions. Let's sum up. I'm going to get a lot of questions tonight.
To me, it's just very interesting as a woman who is, I was raised in an Orthodox family, but I went to Haida very long time.